This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
To the highway, in a brand new day, over the rainbow, gotta let it go. So far, rain is a gun. Fast to freedom,
stars tonight.
Welcome back to Open the Voice Gate for June 3rd, 2021. We are members of the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network. You can find us on the Voices of Wrestling feed or on our own dedicated podcast feed on all podcast platforms or applications. You can follow us on Twitter at Open Voice Gate. If you would like to donate to the show, just click the link in the show notes. It'll take you to our redcircle.com landing site. Then you would click the red box that says sponsor this podcast, and you can set up a one-time or reoccurring donation. No obligation whatsoever, but a special thank you to all of our previous donors. I'm one of your hosts. It's your old pal, Iron Mike Spears, joined alongside my friend and co-host, Case Lowe, as well. And Case, we are through King of Gate. We already have basically the two main events for the July 31st and August 1st doubleheader at Kobe World Cannon Hall. And my big takeaway from this whole entire tournament is, I don't think that they've had this successful of a tournament in a long time. And we walk out of this with KZ as our 2021 King of Gate.
I think the one counter to that you could make is that King of Gate 2019, just 2 years ago, with Ben Kay running the table, going undefeated, in really this satisfying fashion on his way to defeating Pac at World 2019, was probably equal in execution to this tournament. Now, it's obviously been a minute since I've revisited the nitty-gritty of King of Gate 2019. I don't know off the top of my head where I would rank the match quality of that tournament compared to this one. I know there was a Shun Skywalker versus Masaaki Mochizuki match on the opening night of that tournament. That finished in my top 10 for 2019. Benkei versus Yamato, Ada versus Yoshino, and KZ versus Doi, the other four block matches in that May 2019 Korakuen Hall show. And then the tournament concluded in June, 2 years ago, almost to the day, with what I remember being an excellent Benkei versus KZ match, where Benkei won. That set him up to beat Eita in the finals of the tournament. And like I said, he went on to defeat Pac at Kobe World and become the Open the Dreamgate champion. So I think that tournament was a huge success. But yeah, this is certainly rarefied air in terms of just an overall satisfying conclusion of a tournament. We started one place, we finished in another, and I liked every step along the way, even if at times with the sickness of Benkei and Naruki Doi pulling himself out of the tournament as a precautionary measure, even if at times it was very chaotic from point A to point B, I am very satisfied with King of Gate 2021.
Yeah, and it's something I just, as you were speaking there, I was flipping through my notebook for this year's tournament. I don't remember the last time I've had as many 4-star or better matches within a King of Gate tournament. Like, this really did, in a lot of ways, felt like a harken back to 2016 and 2017, which were two just great in-ring tournaments. But I guess, the thing that I that puts this over 2019 in my mind is that tournament in 2019 was all about Benkei, and you had a little bit of Shun Skywalker kind of breaking out here. This one, I mean, there were a whole lot of storylines all throughout. KZ coming back, winning the second chance battle royal, and then winning two matches in one night to win the tournament. Kodama Inoue being the breakout star of the tournament, tapping out everyone with the Engranaje until he got to the knockout stage. Yamato's kind of return to form. And then, of course, the man with the biggest brain of all pro wrestling, Hyo. I just don't remember a tournament that accomplished that much with that many people in wrestling in recent memory.
Yeah, that's the tremendous part of this tournament is that even if you want to point to a 2014 or a 2016, which I thought were incredibly high ranking in ring years for those tournaments, those King of Gate tournaments, I don't know if they accomplished the booking that this tournament did, because you obviously come out of this with KZ, spoiler alert, KZ winning King of Gate 2021. You come out of this with Kota Minoura really elevating his stature in the promotion, and I find the future of Masquerade and kind of what could be an ongoing battle between Minoura and current Open the Dream Gate champion Shun Skywalker, this jockeying for a position that isn't there yet, but certainly could be as time goes on, to be very intriguing. I've talked over the past few weeks about how this is the best work that Hyo has done throughout his career. He finally seems to have a place on the roster. And then, you know, coming out of this, even guys that maybe didn't fare as well, there's obviously Yamato, who made it to the semifinals. I think Yamato has a new lease on life with the way that he wrestled in this tournament. A guy like Kaisuke Okuda, current Open the Brave Gate champion, who did not do well in this tournament. And then you've got your Kingpins, your Dragon Kids, your Sumi Yokosukas, guys like that who perform very well. Perhaps there aren't going to be any long-term ramifications coming from their performance in King of Gate this year, but they at least reminded us how great they can be when given the opportunity.
Yeah, yeah. And it's something that, given what all happened and all the flexibility that they had to endure to make this tournament a success, it's kind of perfectly encapsulated in this June 3rd Cork and Hall show in a lot of ways, which, you know, it's their first Cork and Hall show in 2 months. They weren't able to have the opening day of King of Gate last year because state of emergency had everyone back, nearly a full building, 675. And just, I guess, transitioning from like the overview of the tournament then to just this show, I felt like this was one of the best and most watchable Cork and Hall shows in a good long time. And I came away with this show just incredibly happy and excited to see where the how the next 2 months are going to go, because now they really like waved the flag and said, hey, now we are going full court press to having the two big shows on July 31st and August 1st. That was my big takeaway, Case. What was yours?
The great thing about this Cork and Hall show is that it sort of reversed the curse of the issue with most of their Cork and outings this year. The show closed with a bang, and I felt great about the end result. Was there a weird stretch of this show kind of in the middle stages where things weren't necessarily clicking to the degree that I would have hoped for? Of course there was, but what mattered on this show, the King of Gate semifinals and finals, and to an extent, the Masato Yoshino Speed Star Final Countdown match, which I thought was the best Yoshino match we've seen this year, that stuff delivered, and that left me feeling very good about what is to come in these summer months for Dragon Gate.
Yeah, it's something where there, in a lot of ways, like we were kind of like tapping our toe going like, oh, this unit shift stuff, like it's going to take forever to get it all kind of sussed out. But now High End has Kakatora now. Shimizu is now King Shimizu and is the sixth member of Natural Vibes. And really, it's kind of taking a bunch of people like off the sidelines or kind of in the holding pen now. And really, then you kind of take a step back. And now I feel like it's not going to be as much more stalling and kind of like prolonging this unit shuffle for Naruki Doi to finish honoring Masato Yoshino. We're starting to see some interesting landing places coming out of today.
Well, yeah, you look at the current roster and look at the guys that remain unaffiliated, and I will remove Ultimo Dragon from this, and I will remove Masato Yoshino from this. You obviously have Doi, who said he's not going to find a unit until after the end of July, after Yoshino retires. Shuji Kondo is injured. Strong Machine J is injured. Do we know whether or not Yosuke Santamaria is injured?
I haven't heard anything. It just kind of feels like that Maria is being downcycled right now.
Yeah, which could very easily be the case. I couldn't remember off the top of my head if she was injured or not. So you have Doi, Kondo, Strong Machine J. You have Maria, Saito, Kanda, Mochizuki, Fuji, Yoshida, and then some of your lower card guys, Tamanaga, Gamma, Sora Fujikawa, who could return at any moment, Kenichiro Arai, Kness. So really, what you see there is the group of Doi, Mochi, Fuji, Yoshida, and then throw in a Maria, throw in a Punch, throw in a Kanda, somebody like that, and all of a sudden you have your fifth unit. But with Shimizu joining Natural Vibes, which we'll talk about, and with Kagetora officially linking up with High End, all of a sudden it becomes a pretty simple landscape. And those two specifically coming off the table, I don't want to say they breathe new life into Dragon Gate. I don't think it's that big of a move. But when you look at that unaffiliated pile on the roster, all of a sudden it becomes much more manageable. And you see guys that, you know, for the most part, constantly have something to do on the cards with Shimizu and to a lesser extent Kagetora. The fact that they now have something to do is huge. So I came away from the show very happy with what I saw. I think this was a very satisfying show. And given the fact that there were tournament matches on this show, I do think we need to start from the opening match and work our way through to the main event on this Corkin Hall review.
Sure thing. So opening match on the show was the King of Gate 2021 semifinals. The winner of the C block, Yamato, versus the winner of the A block, Kota Minora. Kota Minora advanced to the finals with the gong in 11 minutes and 13 seconds. And the first time anyone has gotten out of the Engrenaje happened in this match.
I thought this was a fantastic tournament opener. This is their second singles match together all time. Their only other one, which I linked in my King of Gate semifinals and finals preview, happened on a next show. It was Minora's second professional match after his Corkin Hall debut, and that, you know, that was Yamato beating up a young boy for about 8 minutes. Very, very entertaining affair. This one you see less than 3 years later, and I thought Minora just handled himself like a professional. The interesting thing with Minora is that he's someone that doesn't, like, I don't know what to do with him. I really landed on this ideology that he is the Ryo Saito of this current generation, because he is the bridge between the class of 2016 with Skywalker, Benkei, and Hyo, and the class of 2020 with SBK and Kamei and Sora Fujikawa and Hip Hop Kakuta. For whatever reason, because he debuted in the summer of 2018, kind of in this lull between these two classes that are already very well regarded, I don't want to say that he doesn't jump off the page, but there's something about Kota Minora that he almost lost his luster to an unfair degree. But the thing we've seen with Minora time after time again, whether it's challenging Masaki Mochizuki to a singles match just a few months into his career and slapping Mochizuki in the face to start that match, whether it's him joining Mochizuki Dojo, getting big matches in that unit, or taking the reins of the Dragon Gate generation really towards the latter half of 2020, once we saw fans resume to the buildings in July, Kota Minora is someone that I think it's fair to say plays to the level of his competition. And when he's on the undercard, that's fine, because he's able to put on a perfectly serviceable match number two on a big Dragon Gate show. The thing is, when his name is called and he's in a featured singles match, or he's in a big-time opportunity on a Corkin Hall show or on a big show, Minora has now proven time after time that he can deliver. And I find it to be very compelling that a 22-year-old stood in the ring with Yamato and looked on his level. Obviously, special circumstances, this being the opening match, I think unfair to say this is one of the best Dragon Gate openers in recent memory, but I do think the fact that this card started off with such energy, with what I thought was a borderline great match, I went 3 3/4 with it. You can read my written review with full star ratings over at voicesofwrestling.com. I was just a huge fan of this.
Yeah, I was maybe just a smidge lower. I went 3.5. The Minora, like, stepping up, and this was like a big thing that Jay and Ho-Ho talked about on commentary, was that he was someone that previously would show a tremendous amount of nerves before matches, and this time he came out with an air and a presence that kind of, you know, you wouldn't think that he's 22 years old, like, doing that. And it would, the only thing that, like, really kind of took me down, and I think this was a little bit of the story throughout the card in certain places, was I figured the crowd would be a little bit more into this, but I thoroughly enjoyed, like, Yamato at a certain point just trying to vet card him and just, like, throwing strikes and doing this, and then Minora dishing it back. And, you know, it's something where when I was talking about this tournament being a success across the board with, like, people like this, now we had Kota Minora was in the ring for 30 minutes tonight, or yesterday, or today, according to whenever you listen to this. And it's something that this company loves doing this with, when they want to really propel younger guys to the next level. We've talked before about Big R Shimizu and Takahiro Yamamura and their February of 2017 huge Corkin show. And it kind of felt that way for Kota Minora this show. And it was something that, you know, going toe-to-toe with the company ace and really kind of playing into what has made Yamato such a strong wrestler throughout this tournament, I felt like it was just an unmitigated success.
That is a tremendous comp there, a tremendous callback to Big R Shimizu versus Takahiro Yamamura. That was the February 2017 Korakuen Hall show. And for those that don't know, they had a singles match on the undercard, a pretty inconspicuous singles match that ended up going to a 20-minute time limit draw. And then later on in the show, and I don't remember the exact circumstances of why there were openings in this match. I think part of it was due to the recent Masato Yoshino injury, but there ended up being a Berserk versus to be determined match, Cyber Kong, El Lindemann, Shingo, and T-Hawk. And originally, Shima and Mochizuki came out to answer the call. They were going to team with Ben K and with Naruki Doi, but they got on the mic and they said Shimizu and Yamamura proved themselves earlier in the night. They were going to wrestle in this eight-man. So they had two, you know, to an extent, I would say career-making performances. That was the moment where, you know, Shimizu had been to the finals in King of Gate the year before, but this really put him in a new light where he was all of a sudden this credible main eventer. Yamamura was going to get there eventually, and I think often about how I wish he had stayed healthy, whether it would have been in Dragon Gate or elsewhere in Japan, because he was it's just such a natural talent and such a special young wrestler whose career unfortunately ended far too soon. But this for Yamamura, you know, again, he was going to make it one way or another had he stayed healthy. This was the jetpack, though, and really the Minoru to Yamamura comparison here is very, very accurate, because I don't think you can come away from this show looking at Coach Minoru, even people like us who were really high on this guy, who knew that he was in the midst of a monster push. This has reframed the way I think of Minoru. And I think it was the same thing for Yamamura in 2017. We knew he was going to be a star. We knew he was going to be a big deal. But after that February 2017 Korakuen Hall show, or after this June 2021 Korakuen Hall show, it is undeniable that their place in the company has changed.
Yeah, yeah. And it's something that will be very interesting to see where Minoru is kind of positioned, you know, going forward. Shun, of course, has his main event decided for Kobe World, and the rest of Masquerade are Triangle Gate champions. So it makes you, it kind of leaves him almost on the outside in a way. But for someone like Minoru, with like the breakout performance that he had on this tournament, it's actually a good opportunity, because then he could be the person plugged into those special singles matches on both nights of Kobe World. And you could really kind of further cultivate his explosion in a way. And I think that would be very fascinating to see if that's going to be the route going forward. Any other takes you had on the first semifinal before we go through the second one?
Just to put one more point for Minoru, he broke out from the pack in this tournament with his two biggest singles matches being canceled, his main event against Naruki Doi in Fukuoka and his televised match against Ben K and Hokkaido. Obviously, neither of those happened. And by the end of the tournament, we're still talking about how great Minoru was and how much he delivered in the spot.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And then we have the second semifinal. This was in this is SB Kento, the winner of the B block, versus KZ, the winner of the Second Chance Battle Royal. KZ would win with a inside cradle cutback on the SB shooter in 4 minutes and 3 seconds.
Mike, did you see their block match from May 30th that is now available on the Dragon Gate Network?
I ran out of time this morning to watch
hey,
it.
Hey, that's okay, Mike. You're in a safe space here. Let me tell you, I thought this match was far more entertaining than what they did on the May 30th show. Not necessarily that match was bad, but what they did here was far more compact and I thought entertaining, because there was a moment in this match pretty early on. It's a short match, and about halfway through it, SB Kento locks in the SB shooter, and I'm sitting here at home thinking, like, oh my god, he's going to run over KZ on his way to the finals. He's going to beat him twice. He's going to make him tap out here. And if that's the case, he's going to beat Minoru in the finals. So I had about a 45-second period where he was locked into that submission, where I really thought that we were going to be calling SB Kento our 2021 King of Gate winner. KZ then reached the ropes, took some more offense, took that. The SB Kento spinebuster is such a bizarre addition to his arsenal that he, you know, Triple H didn't do a lot of things well in his career, but he did throw a mean spinebuster, and SB Kento is throwing the Triple H style spinebuster, and it looks awesome. After that, he went for the SB shooter again. Then, as you said, KZ countered it, rolled him up, and got the win. Very effective for what this was. I like the way this was executed.
Yeah, no, this was something that started off with like a literal flying start as KZ jumped through the ropes on a Tope Suicida, and that basically they kept up that pace. And it was actually kind of smart in a 4-minute match to be like, all right, we're going to really put the doubt in about KZ before KZ gets the win. And doing the SB shooter like that, I thought like that was a very smartly done thing and very interesting situation for SB Kento coming out of King of Gate. Of course, he lost it dead or alive. He was the Apuestas loser, so he had to get his head shaved. And it was something where very easily could have been kind of backburnered in a way. And then they do the re-elevation after Kobe World, or looking into the hot season and maybe even 2021. But, you know, something to be said. They're like, all right, this is going to be used as a step back. And it does seem in a lot of ways that there is like alluding to him and Ata in a way. Like, did you pick up on that at all?
Not necessarily on this show, but that is something that I think is certainly coming down the pipeline, that we're going to see Ata try to align himself with these young guys in RED. And I think the young guys in RED are going to say, no, thank you, old man, because we're now at a point, given the recent influx of young talent, where Ata can be looked at as old with some of the members on the roster. I think SB Kento's in a really interesting position right now. When we did our King of Gate preview a month ago, I said there's no way he's making it to the semifinals or the finals. I don't think he's featured enough on televised shows to get to that point, because he had, you know, during the initial schedule before the show cancellations, he had the Dragon Kid match in Korakuen Hall in May, and then he would have had the Susumu Yokosuka match in Hokkaido. Obviously, the Dragon Kid match was moved to the no fans arena, and then the Susumu match happened as it was scheduled to. But I thought, given, you know, some guys having 3 matches on tape, I think maybe even some guys had 4 matches on tape, well, you know, they're going to beat SB Kento, and they're going to beat him on non-televised shows. And instead of what they did is they powered ahead, they put him in the semifinals, and I do feel like there's a part of him that is really greatly aided from losing these past few big matches, losing to Dragon Kid in King of Gate, getting his head shaved by Dragon Kid at Dead or Alive, and now losing here. I don't think he was necessarily encroaching on becoming too much, too fast, too soon, but I do think there was an overwhelming nature to SB Kento of just like, God, like, either you have to give this guy the Dream Gate or he has to lose some. And they've chosen the losing route, and I like it. I like where he's at, and I would expect him to have a big featured match at Kobe World at the end of July, and I hope that he does, because right now there's something very interesting about his next few months. And assuming the conflict with Ata continues, I think SB Kento is going to continue being one of the very most interesting wrestlers in the world.
Yeah, it's going to be very fascinating to see, because that's really, like, we talked about unit shift stuff, and like Naruki Doi obviously is kind of like the big bellwether, but I mean, there's still the heel side of things, and that does seem like that would be a very likely path with Kento and Ata coming to blows there. Match 3, it was an unaffiliated tag team match, Ryo Saito and Kenichiro Arai versus Gamma and Funky Jackie Kamei. Kamei got the pin in 8 minutes and 53 seconds of a jackknife cradle on Ryo Saito. And since I was mean last week, I have to be fair here. Terrible match from Funky Jackie Kamei today.
This was his worst performance yet. And it's a real bummer because it was the character's Korakuen Hall debut. But I also, like, this match on paper was very odd to me. And I understand that there were bigger fish to fry with Natural Vibes on this show and their other 2 matches. But you throw him in there with Gamma, which, okay, fine. You know, tag team partners don't need to be, you know, the Young Bucks. They don't need to have perfect chemistry. But in there with Saito and Arakan, who, for as much as I enjoy, especially the latter there in Kenichiro Arai, their bodies don't necessarily bend the way that Funky Jackie Kamei needs them to. And what we saw was, you know, pretty much an extended finishing sequence where Kamei and Saito were really struggling to execute the basics, the bare minimum, and it was really an unfortunate, just sort of, just a bummer on this card, because we've expected, you know, in his year and a half long career, some level of consistency for Kamei, and I don't think this is a giant deal, he doesn't have a history of doing this, but to have this character debut in Korakuen Hall, and kind of a cold match, again, an unaffiliated tag, And then for his performance, specifically him, for it to be as weak as it was a bit of a bummer.
Yeah, and it's something that, given the parts that were here, that this had a pathway to, I don't even know when to say successful, but it had a pathway that it could be, you know, another strong Kamei performance. I mean, we looked at like how Kamei last year had a whole bunch of strong performances with Don Fuji in Hokkaido. And, you know, this is his second match since returning from injury and his first Hellbys match in over a month. And it just is something that, you know, like the thing that kind of came into my brain while watching this is like, oh, Kamei's the guy who has the Torbellino now. And I'm like watching this stuff and I'm watching this match. I'm like, I don't know about him having the Torbellino given the misses here. And to be completely fair, as you said, like he does not miss very often. Still figuring out this character. First match in over a month, at least televised, and made it. It's a bad match that makes sense why it was a bad match, but still disappointing nonetheless.
Mind, did you watch the English feed or the Japanese feed for this show?
Oh, you know, I was spending time with our close personal friends, Jay and Ho-Ho Loon. And Ho-Ho Loon, you know, just the belt historian here, Case.
I love this so much. On a very enjoyable Cork and Hall show, one of my favorite moments undoubtedly is Jay going, well, I think Kenichiro Arai has a heat-up championship belt with him, and Ho-Ho Loon, without missing a beat, oh, yes, of course, that's the heat-up belt. Like, I just love that he knew that for whatever reason. I would like to think, and I wrote this in my review, that when Ho-Ho Loon is not pondering life's biggest questions, he is scouring the internet for Occupation of the Indies files, because, man, this dude knew a heat-up belt when he saw it.
Yeah. And Jay was like, oh, that looks like a WCW tag team belt. But no, Ho was like, no, that's a heat up like heavyweight championship belt. It just was a very amusing thing. And yeah, one of the more brilliant thinkers of our time, Ho-Ho Loon, you know, just able to pull that out of there because it just was kind of wild. And that was kind of like my big positive moment of this match. And I did like the idea that someone with the nickname Jackie went for a jackknife cradle. Like that did kind of pop me, but it just was the way the match broke down towards that and basically having Gamma come in to straighten things out and then just having like another like just like, oh, now it's Jackknife Cradle was just very underwhelming.
So if you look at Kenichiro Arai's championship history, he is the Heat Up Universal Champion. He has been that champion for 18 days. He has been the Asuka Project Champion for 6 years now. He is coming up on basically encroaching on Bruno territory with the Asuka Project title. Now, has he defended the belt since December of 2015? No, he has not, but we're going to count it for Kenichiro Arai. The other title that he has, and I believe this was the non-heat-up championship that he brought to the ring, because he did bring two belts to the ring, is the PWL World Championship, which he won in the same match that he won the heat-up Universal title in. He beat Tamura for this, for the PWL World title, which is Pro Wrestling Live, which is a promotion that is based in England. Are you familiar with Pro Wrestling Live, Mike?
Oh, no, not at all. Not at all whatsoever. I'm looking at like their other championships they have. Boy, sounds like someone did a tour of England, won a belt, and just never came back.
This is bizarre. This feels like a fake promotion because I think it's all like UK people that never broke out into Progress or Rev Pro. And so I don't know who they are, basically.
Yeah.
This promotion is fascinating. If anybody has any information on PWL and why Kenichiro Arai holds one of their title belts, please tweet at us at Open Voice Gate and let us know.
Yeah, absolutely. I did find their Twitter feed, Case. And Tamura, they did tweet him as world champion last month or in April. So this isn't like a dead promotion. They also posted a YouTube link to a match that is that from March that is a match from 2015. Johnny Gargano versus Mad Dog Max. This had to be like one of those promotions that before the UK and Euro boom kind of would pool together with everyone to bring like stars over, you know?
Yeah, maybe Mad Dog Max, he has to be either the booker or just their kind of top guy, because he has matches in PWL dating back to 2009, and he worked there as recently as the summer of 2020 as the CTW heavyweight champion, a belt I know you think of very fondly, Mike. So Kenichiro Arai, international traveler, world-renowned wrestler, and I hope MLW brings him over when they get access to the Dragon Gate talent.
I mean, he's already a Triple Crown champion. He just needs to beat Hammerstone. And, you know, that seems like the perfect fourth belt that he needs to be coming out to the ring. Like, each time he shows up, he should be bringing out another insane belt.
I unironically would love to see Arakan versus Hammerstone. I would just like to see what that match looks like.
Yeah, it's just one of those things that I think would be incredibly fascinating. Like, yeah, no, Jacob Fatu is the world champion. Give me Hammerstone. Like, let's get wild with this here.
I think that'd be tremendous. I know, you know, we've obviously wanted, you know, guys from Natural Vibes and Masquerade and SB Kento over to MLW. Maybe put Arkin on that plane as well. Maybe we see what Kenichiro Arai gets up to in the gritty streets of Chicago.
I mean, this is a guy that I feel like, you know, he would just walk out there. He would be wearing his jumpsuit. You know, he's not going to be like showing up in his short pants. He's going to show up in his jumpsuit. He will be chain smoking outside, putting out the cigarette, and then immediately, you know, having a match with, is Kodo Brazil still a member of MLW? Like, oh. I'm just imagining the possibilities of Kenichiro Arai in this company now.
You're certainly asking the wrong guy in terms of who is and isn't on the MLW roster at this current moment in time. But look, I say this as somebody that is straight edge and keeps the faith. If I'm in Chicago, Kenichiro Arai is there, Kenichiro Arai offers me a cigarette, I am taking that, my friend, and I am smoking with Kenichiro Arai.
Sometimes you have to burn one with Arakan if he's around. You know, I mean, it's understandable.
Quick off topic, a tidbit, but I wanted to bring this up because I know he listens to the podcast, and I'm assuming he'll hear this. But Mike Spears, did you see Suit Williams at AEW's Double or Nothing?
I was trying to keep an eye out, but you know, with AEW stuff, I'm usually like nose deep in my notebook, and then also in the EE Discord. You know, I'm spinning a lot of plates when AEW is on, so I did not notice. Was Suit prominent during these shows?
I did not see him in the crowd, but I saw a picture that he posted of himself on Twitter. And let me tell you, Suit Williams, Double or Nothing, that man was looking like Mr. Steal Your Girl. And I've heard Suit Williams is going to be in Chicago for All Out, and I am going to spend my weekend with Suit Williams. That man is delightful. That man has an infectious smile. And I've heard time after time that he is the best person to watch wrestling with. And I look forward to making that happen in Chicago.
So WrestleMania New Orleans weekend in 20. Now I have to think back in time.
2018, God. I think.
2018. I was going to say 2017, but 2018. It was really a scream. With Lanza and Suit standing up in the back, and like Suit was just like all into like this, like Alan Forel and Suit Williams are like the two people you want to sit next to at a wrestling show, like those two people. And then you had Lanza standing next there, just like staring. And Suit is incredibly animated. It's something that it's a fond memory I have of Kenner, Louisiana.
He's the man. One of my favorite people in this cesspool of a hobby. One of my favorite people over at voicesofwrestling.com. Suit Williams, a good man. A good man, let me tell you.
Speaking of good men, we had a RED versus Masquerade Trios match up next. It was the Masquerade team of Shun Skywalker, Jason Lee, and Dragon Daya versus the RED team of Kaito Ishida, BB Hulk, and Daya Inferno. And Daya Inferno got disqualified with repeated box attacks on Dragon Daya in 10 minutes and 6 seconds. So that feud's back. We're back to where we were before the shoulder dislocation.
Yeah, and I guess we kind of buried the lead because I think these are two topics that tie into each other. After the Yamato versus Coach Minoru match, Kai came out and challenged Yamato to one final match, a no-ropes lumberjack match, which is set for the July Corrigan Hall show. I tweeted out on the Open the Voice Gate Twitter account, this is the first no-ropes match since March of 2014, that match between Yamato and T-Hawk on a show that was headlined by Ricochet and UHA Nation for the Open the Dreamgate title. That is how long it's been since we've had a no-ropes match. And I think that ties in to Dragon Daya versus Daya Inferno, because this feud is back. It was a very clear setup here. We kind of knew the direction this was going to go even before the match happened, just by seeing this on paper. You know, the clear focus here was to get Daya and Daya Inferno back in the ring with one another. It certainly seems like they're building to something, and I just don't know how long this can continue as it is. That I don't know if the blow off is going to be mask versus mask. I certainly read some tweets this morning by fans in Japan that were suggesting that they need to do the mask versus mask match. I'm assuming that's how it ends. But Mike, do you think that's something they can get away with basically let's say it's a 2-month build from here to Kobe World? Would you feel like that's rushed, or are you cool with ripping the Band-Aid off and doing that match as soon as possible?
I mean, the situation also is that Dragon Daya is Triangle Gate champion. So they're going to have a Triangle Gate match at Kobe World. So there's a lot of moving parts to have this happen. I think that sooner rather than later, they'll have this Apuestas match. If I were to kind of mark a date in mind, I think Dangerous Gate, to be honest. I think over the 2 months, just because with Daya and Masquerade as Triangle Gate champions, they're not going to, unless they have good things to do with Jason and La Estrella, that they're not going to go without having a title match when you have two Kobe World shows back to back.
No, and I would assume that the Triangle Gate direction this year is a Masquerade team, an RED team, a Natural Vibes team, and I think you can squeeze a high-end team out of that too. So it seems like it's going to be a big hodgepodge of a Triangle Gate match, and I think you throw Inferno on the RED team. You obviously have Dragon Daya there representing one-third of the Triangle Gate champions. So it's pretty balanced there. I think you can get away with it with doing it at Dangerous Gate. As for this match itself, one, I really think part of just the awkwardness of the first few months of Dragon Gate this year, not having Dragon Daya on those cards just hurts the overall match quality, because Daya showed up here healthy, looking good, and I was immediately reminded that this dude is so good. And not only that, but he once again reminded me that the chemistry between he and Daya Inferno, I think, is terrific. I like what they're doing. I like the direction. Would I have liked this match to have a finish? Absolutely. I think Jason Lee could have ate the pin here, and no one would have been worse off for it. They went with the DQ instead. A bit of a deflating finish, but I understand the long term and why they did this here.
Yeah, and I thought that the work here was pretty strong up until the DQ. I thought that Ishida and Hulk, they did like this. Hulk lifted up Daya in like this. They called it a half grab, but he really grabbed one arm and grabbed one leg and spun him around, like almost like a pseudo airplane spin. And then Ishida just rocked him in the face with a kick, and that really rocked. And it just was something. It's nice seeing the full complement, or seeing Daya back in proceedings, because like as much as we really enjoyed a Masquerade versus RED, not having Daya around, as you said, like he's now such a linchpin at this point that of the roster, that like it's very clear how much he was missing. You know, in a match that they've been doing basically for the last 7 months, having him back here provided some fresh air and proceed.
Yeah, I look at Dragon Daya as a marquee character on this roster now. He's certainly not the most over guy, but I do think he's an integral part of this current crop of Dragon Gate talent, and I think his absence was noticed. It was certainly felt by me, and it hurt my enjoyment of some of these cards. And now that he's back, and I hope he stays healthy, and I hope he stays safe, because he's obviously had, you know, physical health issues in terms of he broke his collarbone. He's also, yeah, you know, dealt with pretty serious bouts of influenza. I know he was taken off shows for precautionary reasons due to COVID at one point. So he's been battling a lot of different things. I hope he can stay healthy. I hope we can see more of Skywalker, Jason Lee, and Dragon Daya as a trio. I thought they had really, really nice chemistry here, because really the great thing about Masquerade right now is it feels like all of those parts are interchangeable. And whether it's, you know, Minora, Lee, and Daya, or Skywalker, Estrella, and Lee, whatever combination it is that they seem to put together, they feel like a cohesive unit. And I think that's something that, as we talk about when we get to Natural Vibes and High End, you know, will High End or Masquerade, or even to some extent RED, will they be remembered as these legendary units? I think it's too early to say. But what I like right now is that within the four units on the roster, they all feel like real units. They feel like real teams that go into battle, and it's a much more refreshing view of the landscape compared to what we were dealing with Tribe Vanguard or Overgeneration once that experiment failed, or even, you know, obviously Antios. I really like the unit landscape right now. I like the way these units are laid out. I like the cohesive nature that all of these guys have within their respective units, and Masquerade is a shining example of that.
In the hobby, it's not easy being a fan of ripping packs or repacks. We hype ourselves up thinking, maybe I can pull a Ken Griffey Jr. rookie card, but with zero transparency on available cards and hit rates, it's all just a shot in the dark. Until now. Introducing Slab Packs from ArenaClub.com, the only repack that provides real value, a complete view of all possible cards, and clear hit rates for each one. Now, when I buy Slab Packs at Arena Club, it finally feels like I know what I'm getting. I was able to open an Arena Club Slab Pack, and I'll be honest, it was a lot better than what you normally do. Say you go to a card show, and there's a random innocuous brown bag of cards, and yeah, you can open it and look, it's going to be junk. You know what I mean? Like, you know what you're probably going to get in those. Maybe you find that fun, and sometimes I do. Sometimes I like just opening up cards and saying, ah, hey, look at some random cards or whatever. But if you're really in this game to find value and find particular cards, it sucks to have to buy these mystery packs, and it ends up being, you know, almost nothing, you know, nothing of value. Not with Arena Club. You can display, again, of all available cards, hit rates, grading. So you know that when you're opening up the slab pack, you are going to get something valuable. You are getting something good. And Arena Club, in addition to having those great slab packs we just talked about, is also a marketplace for card collecting, buying, trading, selling, displaying, all that sort of stuff. But those Arena Club slab packs, man, they are revolutionizing the repack game with transparency. After your pulls are revealed, they'll immediately be placed in your vault for safekeeping or trading and selling, and you can have them officially graded by Arena Club as well. So again, setting these things off, it's going to be officially graded by Arena Club. And the Arena Club grading process is accurate, fast, and transparent, with full grade rationale provided and explanation of how your card was scored. So whether you're buying, selling, trading, or displaying, Arena Club is the card collecting platform that you have to check out. So right now, I've got a special offer here for Voices of Wrestling Network listeners. You can get 10% off of your first purchase by going to arenaclub.com/VOWnet. Again, that's arenaclub.com/VOWnet. Now, that's a crazy offer. That's 10% off a $400 slab pack. $40 off right there. 10% off your first purchase. No matter what that purchase is, 10% off. Again, that's arenaclub.com/VOWnet, arenaclub.com/VOWnet for 10% off your first purchase on Arena Club. And we thank them for sponsoring the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network. What's going on, guys? This is Rich from the Flagship Podcast here on the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network. If I could have a moment of your time, I'd like to tell you about one of our sponsors, Eufy Video Lock. Eufy Video Lock is a smart lock, a 2K camera, and a doorbell, all 3-in-1, offering you triple security. So you can have everything in one device rather than installing many pieces on your front door. But it's not just for security. The Eufy Video Lock is also for convenience. No more concerns about losing keys, and you can assign passwords to your family members and see them coming back home via the integrated cameras. Some other great features we love about the Eufy Video Lock is it is easy to install and set up with just a Phillips screwdriver, no drilling required. Keyless entry, no more fumbling for keys when your hands are full. You never have to worry about kids losing keys or passing among renters. You also have 0.3 second fingerprint recognition and 1 second unlocking. Again, 0.3 seconds, it's going to recognize your fingerprints, and in 1 second, it's going to unlock. And with the AI self-learning chip embedded, the more you use it, the more accurate it will be. Also, no battery anxiety. You have a rechargeable battery in there that could last around 4 months, and you will get a low battery notification before it runs out. Passcode unlocking, a remote control with a 2K clear sight, see who's at your door, and control from anywhere through the Eufy app. With enhanced night vision, you can have optimized view even in the evening. You can also secure your package delivery by view and two-way audio. And then best of all, no monthly fee. A bunch of other brands out there are going to charge you a monthly fee. You have your recordings locally, and you never have to pay for storage. Customer service, Eufy's got you handled as well. They are on standby for you 24/7 so you can enjoy a worry-free experience with an 18-month warranty, all backed by their professional customer service team. Contact them anytime by telephone, email, or live chat. Personally, as a homeowner, I love my Eufy video lock. I have the ability to see what's going on when I'm not home, when packages has arrived, and really the thing I love the most about it, the ease of being able to lock and unlock my doors without having to fumble with my keys, reach in my pocket, or wait, no, crap, they're in my backpack, all that sort of stuff. All this is happening while my dogs are barking at me. You know what? Not anymore with the Eufy video lock. I touch it. 0.3-second fingerprint recognition. 1 second, door is unlocked. Much, much easier. So if you want to jump on board with Eufy Video Lock, search Eufy Video Lock. That is E-U-F-Y Video Lock. Again, that's Eufy Video Lock, E-U-F-Y Video Lock, or visit eufyofficial.com/videolock to see how you can gain complete control of your door.
Absolutely. And we had a poll part afterwards, so this is obviously going to be something that they keep under the warmer at the very least here. And then we had the Speedstar Final Countdown in Tokyo. I guess Masato Yoshino is not going to be on the July 9th Korkin, but the teams on this match, this was a 10-man tag, was Masato Yoshino, Ultimo Dragon, Naruki Doi, Masaki Mochizuki, and Don Fuji versus the RED fivesome of Eita, Kai, Kazuma Sakamoto, Diamante, and Hio. Doi got the win with the Bakatari sliding kick in 14 minutes and 50 seconds. And Case, before we get into this, I had noticed something on Twitter today that what they're doing as a merch rollout for Speedstar Final, and I don't know if you saw this, they have Speedstar Final t-shirts in 9 different colorways for each and every unit that Masato Yoshino has been a part of. Which one would you be getting colorway-wise?
I got to log on to the Gaiora store real quick and take a look at this. First of all, Dragon Gate stays winning in the merch game. Nobody's able to milk cash out of their fans quite like them. Where did you see these shirts? What Twitter account can I look at?
It's the Dragon Gate official Twitter account.
All right, let me take a quick look there. And to your point, I believe that Yoshino, I think this was his second to last match in Tokyo. I think they're doing 2 matches in Tokyo, assuming that everything goes according to plan. I believe, at least according to Jay and Ho Lun on commentary, that he'll be there next month in good spirits and wrestling there as well. Wow, I really like these shirts. This is nice. I like the World 1 quite a bit, that gray, gold, and black. And look, it comes across in my voice. I'm a black t-shirt guy, and that Maximum shirt, that's real simple. That's a real good look right there.
Yeah, I mean, I think that I really like the Junction 3 one just because, like, they don't like that shade of green. That's kind of Masato Yoshino green in a way, and that kind of appeals to me. Toriumon, I have a Toriumon Generation Tau up in my office, so I think I'd avoid that one. I do have a lot of Monster Express stuff, so, you know, World 1, Junction 3, maybe World 1 International.
The World 1 International with the hot pink looks good.
Yeah. Very rarely that I have to say the Italian Connection probably is the worst t-shirt out of the bunch, because the red and green just kind of contrast each other very weirdly, I would say.
I am wearing a shirt that looks very similar to this Blood Generation shirt, a kind of dark red with black text on it right now. And then I'm assuming the one next to that is Muscle Outlaws, but
yeah,
I don't feel like that's a very good representation of the Muscle Outlaws colors. I don't think they used a yellow that bright. Am I mistaken?
I think it was like a shade darker. It wasn't, because this yellow is highlighter yellow.
Yeah, it took me a second to figure out what that was. It's by process of elimination, I got it. But I don't think I would realize that that's a Muscle Outlaw shirt unless I was looking at it on this order sheet where there's 8 other t-shirts by its side.
Oh, and you have to know that they're probably going to be selling a box with all 9 of them.
Oh, God, and they absolutely should. There's some good merch today. KZ's got a new shirt that I thought looked good. I really like the new Yamato Spirit shirt. And, of course, Coach Minora, a new shirt as well that looks pretty cool. Looks like one that I might wear. SBK, also, this man killing the merch game right now. That SBK shirt looks good. That's simple SBK across the chest and yellow on a red t-shirt. That's a good look.
Yeah, just a lot of good fits going on in Dragon Gate. And I just fully imagine, because they were selling a $250 equivalent price box that was like the Speedstar like final box that had like a t-shirt, a towel, a program, a CD, and one like golden ticket to do like a 15-minute Zoom call with Yoshino. Like, they know how to get the money very easily.
Grab your glove, Mike. That's a good opportunity for you.
I mean, how does one I feel like trying to like have a glove and ball and go have a catch with Yoshino and try to go like that way. I mean, that's just asking for me to like break my camera, and we don't need Yoshino to pull his back like this close to his retirement.
I know they did a Final Countdown in Sapporo t-shirt as well. I wonder if they're doing that for every one of the towns that he visits. That certainly seems like something that the Dragon Gate merch office would cook up of, you know, your Final Countdown in Kobe, Final Countdown in Osaka, Final Countdown in Sapporo, Final Countdown in Tokyo. But I have not seen a Final Countdown in Tokyo shirt, so I'm not sure if they're doing that or not. What I will say about this match, this Final Countdown in Tokyo match, which again, my understanding is this is his second and final match in Tokyo that he will be wrestling on the July Korakuen Hall show. If we hear otherwise, we'll tweet about it at Open Voice Gate. This was my favorite Yoshino match this year. And it's a pretty simple reason why, which is the fact that this match felt like it existed in Dragon Gate canon, whereas his prior matches before this, the homecoming match that he had in Higashi Osaka, the Dead or Alive match, the match in Fukuoka with Natural Vibes, and the match in Sapporo with High End, those all felt like they were off in their own little universe and like they really had no ramifications on the larger Dragon Gate scene. This was based around Yoshino wrestling Hyo and Hyo trying to get them both counted out, and I thought it was awesome.
Yeah, it was something that, I mean, finding character in Hyo just really opens up things, and it makes the things there, because they had like this incredible double countout tease that was really tremendous, that like Yoshino got back in, like Hyo dragged him backstage. Yoshino sprinted in at 17, and then I guess Hyo like picked up that he was gone and he was not gonna get counted out himself. He got in at 19 and then immediately ate a Torbolino and the Bakatari sliding kick, like perfect finish in this. And you know, everyone else here, well, it looked really strong. I mean, we got a lot of like Don Fuji just being like a real master worker in this, which, you know, very much amused me. Diamante flying around like he has no care in the world. And there was like a moment where like Ada came down, they felt like that he maybe like twisted his ankle and he rolled immediately to the outside to get cold spray. So that might be something to kind of watch. Like, he was able to complete the rest of the match, but it was something that was kind of noticeable there. But I'm in complete agreement with you. This was Yoshino's best match of the series, best match of his year. And it was something that was nice to see, like shades of like maybe on August 1st, he decides to just completely just lose his mind and be like, all right, I'm going to really hurt tomorrow, but today I'm going to have one last amazing match. And, you know, I don't know about you, Kiz, but I kind of like cast that thought way back in my brain, or just like, so like, this is not going to happen. This is who he is now. And this is for the fans, like just kind of treat him as like doing this kind of exhibition tour. But now, you know, Kiz, Masato Yoshino, once again, making you think that, oh, things are over. And now maybe I'm getting my hopes up here about August 1st, but it was really, really nice to see. And I went 3 3/4. This was almost a notebook match.
No, I think that's an entirely fair assessment. It's something that watching him at his homecoming show, watching him at Dead or Alive, I thought that would be it for him. But he put forth a level of effort here that was very calming in a way. And I think for one final night, he can certainly deliver the goods. Now, I think there's an interesting, I'll call it a predicament that they're in with Yoshino, where, again, like we talked about, prior to this, his matches had really only existed in a vacuum, kind of away from the landscape of the rest of Dragon Gate. And I kind of want to get your thoughts on that, because obviously when he announced his retirement at the end of 2019, he was positioned to be in this long feud with Eita. Then COVID ruined that, and then Eita won King of Gate, and he won the Dream Gate, and they got away from it, and then they never really had a chance to return to it this year because Yoshino got hurt on the very last show of 2020. We've seen this idea that Yoshino is going to gift his signature moves to the younger talents on the roster. I know he gave Kamei the Torbolino. Do you remember off the top of your head the other moves that he's gifted to the other roster members?
Yeah, so Kamei got the Torbolino. The Komori, which is his version of the Tarantula, he gave to La Estrella. He gave the Sling Blade to Jason Lee. And over the Sapporo shows, he gave the missile senton to UT because he remembered that he was doing this again.
Yeah. So there's no interactions between those guys and Yoshino, which I find to be really odd. I mean, yes, the big picture, you know, this match where Yoshino is with the legends, he's with Mochi, Fuji, Ultimo, and Doi against RED. Of course, that's probably the more satisfying route to go just in terms of getting fans in the building. But imagine if you had Yoshino in the place of Gama, even if you want to throw him still against Arakan and Saito. At least you have that story there with Yoshino and Kamei, and they can, you know, if Yoshino can do a Torbellino, I don't think he's done one this year, they can do stereo Torbellinos, or at the very least...
He did it in the match tonight.
Okay, fantastic. So they could have done that there, or at least, you know, Kamei could have done that with Yoshino watching on. I'm sure, just given his injuries and the fact that he already pushed back his retirement, whatever plans they had obviously did not go according to plan, but it still does feel a little anticlimactic that Masato Yoshino is going to retire in 2 months. And with the exception of this match, he's kind of just been doing exhibitions.
And it's something that then you look at how August 1st is going to go, because tickets are almost sold out for the second night of the Kobe World doubleheader. And you look at like, oh, is it going to be something where like they're going to touch back on this? Maybe Eita is in like one of the final matches, and you know, there's like three big moves that Yoshino has not requested on people. He still has Lightning Sparrow, the Sol Naciente, and the Sol Naciente Kai as like the big ones. I guess another space as well, but another space is a move that's just kind of transitional in a way. So it's really like those moves. Maybe it is something that ends up, because almost every single one of these matches have involved Eita. Maybe it ends up that Eita gets the Sol Naciente at the end of this, which would make sense given like the Lucha background, and that when Eita was going for the Apocalypses and the El Numero Uno's finishing maneuver, for him to pick up the Sol Naciente would make sense. And if it's something about the Eita face turn that we've both been kind of been anticipating for the last 8 months, it would be a pretty good moment for him to kind of like turn face and do that.
Yeah, not to veer into fantasy booking, but if Eita's time in RED ends because Yoshino gifts him a move at his retirement, that is terrific. I am really into that idea.
And it's his most important move.
Yeah.
Like, it's not like the idea that La Estrella got the Komori, which I don't remember the last time he's done that, that tarantula variant case. He's not done it probably since he returned from injury, in my memory.
No, I certainly don't remember the last time he did it.
So I think that would be very interesting with that. So yeah, no, this rocked, and it was just was what I think we both were kind of hoping for this retirement road, to have matches like this, and maybe gives us a little bit of hope towards the future. But we have other things to talk about in the future, Case, because this match was announced originally as Natural Vibes of Susumu, Kinki Horiguchi, and UT, and X versus High End, Dragon Kid, Keisuke Okuda, Ben K, and an X. And as we talked about earlier, we have the laning spots for Kagetora and Shimizu. Kagetora joined up with High End. He made a comment on commentary saying that Dragon Kid, no one really likes you on commentary. Yamato, you're kind of, or on mics, Yamato, you're okay. Ben and Okuda don't talk, so what you need is a mic worker. So I decided at the start I would join this and be your mic worker, and everyone just kind of gave him the look of Ben K looked like he was like, yeah, but Okuda looked like he was about to kill him. And then we have to talk about the state of Shimizu, Case, as Big R Shimizu, Ryotsu Shimizu, Bokudomo Dragon, Big R Shimizu is now King Shimizu, and he came out looking kind of slim, actually, but dressed up in a mawashi like he was a sumo wrestler, obviously kind of cribbing off Rikishi. This is a guy who loves the Attitude Era of wrestling so much that he's doing a Rikishi gimmick. And I have to say, I love King Shimizu. Like, this is something that, like, it's clear where he's positioned and like him as a power fighter where he is here. But boy, I never thought about adding him into Natural Vibes, but perfect fit, and, you know, provides a new element to Natural Vibes.
Let me tackle Kagetora first because it's going to be shorter. I think him and High End as the lowest ranking member of that unit is tremendous. He looks in his new gear so much like Noah era Tsuyoshi Kikuchi that it is distracting. I need this man to go out there and start throwing headbutts with no regard for human life, because that is all I could think about in this match was like Xbox Matt 2002 era Noah, when Kikuchi put on a bunch of weight and then essentially revenge of the nerds, the young Noah roster, and just got his revenge after getting his ass kicked for all of the 90s. He said, there's actually a generation below me and they need to experience what I went through. So maybe Kagetora gets really mean. I think that would be an interesting direction for him to go. As for King Shimizu, this is such a win. Mike, this was so over in the building. This was so over in the tweets I saw both from people in Japan and people around the world. This is a home run of a character, because it's goofy, but it's not. You know, Shimizu winning with a big splash, which I think would be a really interesting new finisher for him. And really, other than there was one time where he hit the ropes and did some sort of falling senton onto an opponent where that got a laugh line because of the way that he ran up to his opponent. But for the most part, outside of the dance, I felt like Shimizu was a pretty serious competitor in this match, and I think that registered with the audience. So yeah, he's going to be taking some falls. Of course, you have UT and you have Kamei there too. But I just love this. I think this is such a massive win for Shimizu, for Natural Vibes, for the overall well-being of Dragon Gate. I am a huge fan of King Shimizu.
And it's something that, like, we've always talked about, like, you can't really have a unit with four people. We saw the issues with High End with this, with Masquerade, while Daya was out here. Five is the gold number, but six is where you could really do some things, because now with KZ and the Dragon Gate picture that has him do one thing, you now have, like, some combination of Yokosuka, Horiguchi, UT, and Shimizu doing a trios match, and then someone else, like whoever's not doing that trios match, can be tagging with Kamei in openers. And it just really, you know, pulls the unit together. And the fact that, like, he used to do this, it was more of a falling splash, not like a flying sausage like this one was, the Otakebi, which was like a big, like, transitional deep two count move. But I like the idea now that he is using this as a finish. I think that this is something that's really cool. I think it's funny the fact that, like, on commentary, Jay had to make a note about, well, one of those chains he's going to have to, like, leave at home, because we already went through all that with Yoshi, and I think we're trying to get away from that. But
I was wondering what he meant by that, because I missed whatever he was referring to.
Well,
you could say what was, I just missed what was on the chain.
It was a pot leaf. It was
okay.
A pot leaf.
That's what I assumed, but I didn't see that specifically, and I wasn't sure exactly what Jay was referring to there. The idea of Big R Shimizu buying a gold chain with a pot leaf on it is hilarious. I really wish they would have filmed that, so just so I could see him handing the money over to the cashier. That sounds hilarious.
So proud of himself doing this.
Yeah. this was awesome. This just, it felt very Dragon Gate, and it's another one of those things that, you know, I don't know if it's going to make any new fans, but it's certainly going to keep the fans that are around very happy and excited at the prospect of Shimizu in Natural Vibes, which obviously it gives the unit some much needed size, because you're looking at a unit where your powerhouse is really Yokosuka and one of your bigger, more muscular guys is KZ. And even in Dragon Gate, that is an alarmingly small unit when you factor in Horiguchi, Kamei, and UT. So Shimizu gives them some size. He gives them some character. He gives them some options in terms of the booking. I think, and this is a lazy comp to make, or maybe not a lazy comp, but an easy comp to make, given that he just rebranded with a new name. But when we look at the big picture, and we look at what Shimizu has to offer to this promotion, given all the gimmick changes, given the fact that he can kind of seamlessly go from comedy to being in a big serious spot, and he can do it very, very easily, is Big R Shimizu's career trajectory very similar to Don Fuji's?
I mean, I think that's a worthwhile comp, especially like when you look at, like, tag team work, like Don Fuji outside of his Dreamgate reign, mostly known as like tag team wrestler, right? Like he will have great singles matches, but a lot of the like Mochi Fuji and then the married team of Shima, those were kind of like his big acts for a while. So I can see that comp. The person that actually that's more directly that I kind of see his role, kind of like Genki in a way, with like doing the levity and like having the moments where people are like, oh no, it's a backslide from heaven. Like that's what kind of reminded me of, because of just like the way that he could kind of turn it on like that. Whereas with Don Fuji, I mean, you know how I feel about Don Fuji, Casey. He's one of the 100 top wrestlers of all time. But I just like Fuji had like such a singles run that we really have not seen from Shimizu. And I guess that's a differentiation there.
The shot put slam certainly does have backslide from heaven energy at this point in Shimizu's career, where it's not something that he relies on all the time, but you kind of know it's a big deal when he busts it out. So I think the Horiguchi comp is very fair as well.
Yeah, and it's something that I really love what Natural Vibes is doing. Oh, like I talked about it before, like I think that's so brilliant. And then like Kakatora just made sense in high end, and it's something that there's still going to be some pieces that could be added, and Kakatora can move up if like Sora Fujikawa came back and just joined up of high end in a way. Like I could see that happening, and it's just, you know, I think these were like two smart unit changes that happened on this show.
Yeah, I think Natural Vibes is the most cohesive unit in all of wrestling right now. I think they're even a little bit better than Masquerade. There's something about Natural Vibes when they pop up. I firmly believe all these guys are friends. I think they like hanging out together, and I think they like fighting together. And whether or not that's true, I don't know, but that is the impression I get whenever they're on my screen.
I mean, Susumu's instant or his social media, his Twitter account, whenever he posts Kamei on there, the response. You add in Shimizu in that mix, like we might be reaching a golden age in Dragon Gate social media presence.
Very much so.
And then we got to the main event. This was for the King of Gate 2021 finals. As y'all know, it was KZ versus Kota Minoura. KZ won in 20 minutes and 5 seconds with a spider twist hold to become the 2021 King of Gate. Immediately called his shot. We have the night one main event of Kobe World on July 31st. It will be Shun Skywalker making his next defense of the Open the Dream Gate champion against the guy who defeated him 2 years previous in the same venue in KZ.
Mike, I just wrote a lot of words over at voicesofwrestling.com about KZ's career, about how he got there, and about this match. So before I say my piece on it, I'd like to hear your thoughts first.
Well, it's funny how similar like our takes were on this, whereas we try not to, when we do like these almost instant reactions, we try to kind of keep ourselves isolated so we don't influence each other, because I've edited and posted your piece on this, and it was fantastic. It was very similar to my thoughts here. KZ now, like with the exception of Takashi Yoshida, and he actually might be tied with him, is the current I forgot what I was going to say. The current bridesmaid, that was the phrase I was going to make, and the Dreamgate scene with the most dream keys here, and just the way that it's been elevated, and the way that it's kind of how over the last 5 years since Akira Tozawa left, and I mean, you could even like point to earlier in 2016, like on the episode Speedstar, when we had the Die at Hearts like disbands match with Rich, like that was starting to first really see the shades of KZ as a presence more so than a fall post. And this kind of just in a lot of ways became one of the big like steps of completing that in a way, and just like an incredible match. Like, I don't know if this is my match of the tournament, but I still went 4.5 stars on it. It was something where a lot of really tight strike and neck work, especially the way that KZ inventively dismantled Kota Minoura's neck, like getting him tied up in the ropes so that his head was almost like hangman through the ropes, and then doing a drop kick into him, shoving his shoulders into the ropes, and then doing it to the turnbuckle, and just like great chemistry with like these two guys. They just absolutely destroy each other on the apron. It seemed like the KZ does not want to have a spine anymore, which is sick. And then just the way that these two guys worked and really like brought in, we had like some really deep two counts on the bevel gear and the impact going into the final stretch. And I just thought that this was a success across the board. And it's something that we always knew that KZ had this match in him over the last few years of him being Mr. February and Mr. Special Singles Match. But like seeing it really as like an intended main event performance just was just incredible across the board. And then as we talked about earlier, like Kota Minoura looked tremendous in this match as well. Had the bridge that he got on that one German suplex case was almost like it was something that it was such a deep bridge where I almost thought that it was like, he's very lucky that like he got his feet in there, or else it looked like he just like gave himself a back bump on this.
Yeah, I think it was after the double German spot where Minora hit a snap German into a bridging German suplex. Where I think it was after that spot where Alan Forel tweeted out just how technically sound Kota Minora is. And it goes back to what I was saying earlier. This is a guy that we realistically should have been losing our minds from day one. Now, I was a fan of him when he debuted. I've said constantly this past week, I knew he was going to be at least a prized pupil, I will say, because he got, you know, gear and an established character in his second month after debuting in the black tights. And typically, it's either one of those where you come in with gear and character, or you come in as a young boy and you do your time there, and he seemed to really expedite that process. So Minora was so incredibly technically sound here, and I think this was a match that really highlighted, you know, and this is something that we've talked about quite a bit recently, but just the evolving house style of Dragon Gate. This is a match that if it was the finals of King of Gate, you know, 2012, which was KZ's first King of Gate tournament, or even if it was the finals of King of Gate 2017 or 2018, I think we would have been taken aback by just how different this match was. Very submission focused. Outside of the apron spot in the beginning where KZ went for an impact, Minora countered it, hit the water wheel suplex on the apron. Not really a ton of big head drops or more what I would almost label as like classic puro moves. This was a match that was rooted in submission. It was rooted in psychology. It was rooted in countering down the stretch. And I just thought it was terrific. I love this match. It's my match of the tournament. It's my number two match in Dragon Gate all year, just behind Skywalker and Ishida from Champion Gate in Osaka. Like we said at the top of the show, this was an immensely satisfying conclusion for KZ. I think he came out of this looking like a star and feeling like a guy that is hot going into the biggest match of his life. He is hotter than he's ever been, and he's going to be the biggest opportunity to date, and that is exactly what you want. And a guy like Minora, who very much so had Takahiro Yamamura syndrome on this show, and is leaving a much bigger star than how he came in.
Can we just take a moment and respect how bold Dragon Gate is for Kobe World 2021? Like, this is something that, like, earlier, like, I was all in on the safe choice of, well, you have to sell out this building twice, so you're going to put the company ace in here. No. They're having Shun Skywalker, who has not had a match in Japan outside a state of emergencies since 2019, versus KZ, someone who, for two-thirds of his career, was about as big of a lost post as you can get. Like, just phenomenal stuff.
Yeah, no, it's ridiculous. It's a really young main event. You know, I think Skywalker is 20, yeah, he just turned 25, and yeah. KZ, let me do
34.
Some quick, 34. So, I mean, that's
he's my age.
Yeah, so that's one of those deals. And again, the alternative was a 25-year-old and a 22-year-old in the main event, but KZ at 34 has become old in the context of Dragon Gate, but I think any other promotion in the world would kill to have the main event of their biggest show and a credible main event at that be a 34-year-old versus a 25-year-old. That is Dragon Gate setting the bar for young talent at such an incredibly high level, where you look at a guy like KZ, who is 34, as he should be, entering his physical prime and his mental prime at the same time, doing the best work of his career. His mind has finally caught up with his body. And you tell me he's 34 years old, and I go, oh, it's kind of old, don't you think? Like, it's just absurd, the level of talent and the level of young talent in this promotion right now. It's really unbelievable.
Hey, we're calling him old. He's 5 days older than I am. 5 days. He'll be 35 at Kobe World.
He's not old. He is Dragon Gate old, though.
Yeah. No, I mean, geez, imagine, like, it's something that it's very reflective in a way, if you think about it, because when Toriumon was founded, you have people like Dragon Kid, like Shima, like Suwa, like Magnitude, like Magnum Tokyo, like Masaki Mochizuki, who were all in their early to mid-20s at that time. And it's kind of like, it's not just that the generational shift is happening, as it's clearly apparent here. It's reflective of where the promotion was 22 years ago. And I find that really fascinating.
Well, I was talking about this to someone pretty recently someone on Pro Wrestling Only, the very infamous message board that we talked about with Rich Krejci earlier this week on our Speedstar episode, talking about some of the best matches of Masato Yoshino's career, where they were asking me a question about Modern Dragon Gate, and specifically in the context of something that I used to preach really heavily when talking about Dragon Gate, was context, context, context. You can't fully appreciate this if you don't have the context. And I think partially just my views on the promotion have changed to where I don't think that is as necessary as it used to be. But I also think part of the reason that I don't preach that as much is that we are really in chapter one of so many of these guys' careers. We're looking at an entirely new fleet, a generation of guys really spanning from KZ all the way down the roster to their newest debut in La Estrella, where they are, you know, barely making a dent in what could be very lengthy, very legendary careers. And it is such a drastic shift from Shima, Mochizuki, Yoshino, Doi, even Yamato to some extent. It's just amazing how quickly this all happened and how quickly the tone of the promotion changed. And I think it changed for the better.
Yeah, that there's a certain fluidity with it where we're probably looking in 2 years that, other than Mochizuki, who will wrestle probably up until his dying days, that Yamato will be like one of the old full-timers on the roster just in his early 40s. And then you're going to have all these guys who are in their 20s, some of them in their early 30s. And I mean, there's, what, six kids right now doing Dragon Gate Future matches right now? Like, it's never ending in Dragon Gate. It's one of those things that when you compare the rest of the Japanese wrestling scene and the rest of the worldwide scene, no one has done this like setup and done a generational shift at this point. Like, we're still dealing with state of emergencies. We're still dealing with the fact that these are half capacity buildings, but you look at a Korakuen 675. I don't keep up on other companies' attendance as much as I used to, but I can't think of a time that someone else has had attendance that high in Korakuen Hall this year. And then you look at like across the world where it's like, oh, New Japan, they're going to be in an issue in 5 years. And you look at like All Japan, who knows? And Noah, I mean, is a content play right there. But you look at Dragon Gate, it's like, no, we are starting to see returns here. We're looking at least one sellout of Kobe World Cannon Hall in July and August, and they're going to try to sell it out with Shun Skywalker versus KZ. And that is remarkable. That is bold. And it's something that hopefully that all this trust and all this care they've put into the young generation is going to pay off for them very quickly.
For context, June 2nd, 2021, Korakuen Hall, New Japan did 447 fans for a main event of Goto, Ishii, and Yoshihashi defending the never openweight six-man title belts against Bushi, Sanada, and Naito. So Dragon Gate, is the King of Gate finals bigger than a never openweight six-man? Yes, but that you know, proved to be true as Dragon Gate drew more fans.
Okay, Noah, the Mitsuharu Misawa Memorial Show last week had 614.
And I think that's actually that's more of an apples-to-apples comp, because the Misawa Memorial Show always draws well. And look at that card, where it's Junior Heavyweight Tag Team Title Match, GHC Tag Team Title Match, Junior Heavyweight Title Match, a National Title Match, and then a main event of Muto and Masato Tanaka against Masakatsu Funaki and Naomichi Marufuji, which I might end up watching, even though I try to avoid most things Muto, but Tanaka and Funaki on opposite sides has me very intrigued by that. I think that's a very fair comp, because that Misawa Memorial Show, if they run it in Korakuen, it typically sells out, but I think they've put it, even in more recent years, in a bigger venue because it always draws so well.
Yeah, the only other show that I'm looking at Pro Love for this is Zero One's 20th anniversary show, 652, with Tanaka versus Shima, which was originally going to be a sumo hall match that they had there. And then the rest of them, I mean, it's very difficult to evaluate, but you look at this. Also, it's worth stating, this is Dragon Gate's first Korakuen Hall show since April. They lost their May 1. So it's all something that like I look at, and it's pretty fascinating to see how things are going like this. And it'll be something to see how the two Kobe Worlds end up being, because it looks like that could be one of the most successful weekends in the company's history.
Do we know what the attendance limitations will be for the two shows in Kobe World Hall? And I want to make it very clear, I'm gonna continue to reemphasize this. It's one Kobe World and one Speedstar Final Countdown. It's not a New Japan situation.
Yeah, it's not a New Japan situation. They're two distinct things. I believe it's still 50% or 5,000.
Okay.
So last year, Kobe World in November was 2386. What is the New Japan show that is, because they're the only two companies that run Kobe World Cannon Hall. I'm trying to think what that show was. I'm looking up the results right now to see when the last time they were in Kobe. So I think that 3,000 to 4,000 is what I would be expecting. I can't say that with any certainty, though, because of how fluid the situation is. And of course, that will be after Olympics. So who knows like how that goes, to be quite honest. So, yeah. All right. So New Japan, I'm just looking this up right now. The last time they were in Kobe, they were there for the G1 Climax Night 5. And it was 25:48 for that. And then they were there 5 days earlier for Destruction, and they got 61:48. So, no, that's 2019. So last time they were there for G1 Climax, it was 25:48. So maybe it is something that 4,000 or 3,000 is what I expect, maybe.
Yeah, in 2019, Dragon Gate drew about 5,300 fans. So I think anywhere in that ballpark would be a massive success, because we have had to kind of recalibrate the way we think about World, because for so long we were getting the inflated attendance numbers where
9,000.
It was 10,000 for Hulk versus Yamato in 2014. And, you know, there might have been, with all the tickets that were given away for those Kobe Worlds during the Okamura era, there might have been close to that many people there, but there were certainly not 10,000 ticket buyers in that building.
Yeah. And it's something that in 2018, they had that massive dip when they were starting to run shoot numbers. And someone in the company told me that they actually made more money at that Kobe World than any other Kobe World before. So it's going to be a big week in there. And there's not going to be a whole lot of stuff case that is going to be making the network, because sadly, the Okinawa shows have been pulled because of state of emergency. I'm real bummed about that. I would have loved to have seen those, but
Garuka Mask was bummed about it too. He and Susumu Yokosuka were talking about how excited they were to see each other and how it's not going to happen now.
Oh man, I like that is Dragon Gate Network content that I would love. You know, those two guys, you know, probably having a beer, a cup of coffee, you know, after the shows in Okinawa, you know, just like very content sighs and exhaustion, the two of them, like talking about old times and all of that. We missed out on that, sadly.
I believe Garukan Mask got on Twitter that he was planning on bringing Yokosuka some Okinawa fabric for Yokosuka to sew more masks. And
oh, wow.
The fact that can't happen now is very cruel.
Yeah, I mean, he is the seamstress of the roster. And some of the masks that he have, like I've looked at like the Natural Vibes one with the KZ artwork, and I've been like, you know, that's a pretty tight mask. Like next time I do an order, I'll see if I can pick up some Susumu Yokosuka masks out there. Be interested to see what his Okinawa style masks would have.
This is not something that we'll be able to talk about within the next few weeks, as there's, you know, we'll have some gaps here. We'll figure out some stuff to do. Expect more Masato Yoshino related content. But I did see yesterday, and this is something that if we have the time when it happens, would love to talk about this on the show, assuming the match isn't terrible. But Mike, I don't know if you saw yesterday. I know you keep a close eye on Big Japan Pro Wrestling, but I don't know if you caught this, that on July 4th, Tsubasa, Billy Kin Kid, and Masamune are going to defend the UWA World Trios titles against Hubbo, Ultimate Spider Jr., and Andy Wu.
Jesus Christ. The best of Asaka Pro versus the best of Russell 1.
Yeah, if there was ever, like, that is the state of Big Japan for me, where I don't care about 2021 Sekimoto. I haven't been into Okabayashi in a while. The rest of the strong division is terrible. I don't watch I don't watch death matches. So this trios match, best possible match Big Japan could have booked. And it's a UWA World Trios title match, which I think technically makes it like Dragon System adjacent. So if that match is good, we're going to talk about it when it happens.
For sure. Yeah, because we're going to have some breaks here. They will be in the friendly confines this Saturday in Kobe Sambo Hall for a show. And then they are not making tape, it seems, until later this month when they return to Kobe Sambo Hall. So only two more televised shows. Like, that's just the world we live in. It's a bummer, but it is what it is. So we definitely probably will have some time to see what Ultimate Spider J is up to. And I mean, right now, looking at their schedule, they have two more shows in June. Then they have Tokyo Korakuen Hall on the 9th of July, KBS Hall on the 11th, then Kobe Sambo Hall on the 22nd. So they only have five televised shows before Kobe World Pro Wrestling Festival 2021.
Hard to believe it's already that time of the year.
Yeah, it is already that time of year. Then it's going to be the hot season, Case. You know what I mean? I'm right now looking at their August calendar, and oh boy, it is going to be a lot of stuff that is just going to be kicking off then. But Case, did you have anything else that you wanted to talk about before we got out of here?
Mike, we got through the hellacious month of May. It wasn't as extreme as we thought it would be because of the shows that were canceled at the very beginning of the month. But we had circled May for quite a while as a month with a lot of content, a lot of shows, and a lot of big ramifications. We got through that. We got through King of Gate. KZ versus Shun Skywalker is your Kobe World Pro Wrestling Festival 2021 main event. And I feel very good about that.
I do too. I it's so fascinating. Like, I could talk about this for a while, but that's going to do it for this week. If y'all haven't had a chance, go back and listen to the first episode of Speedstar that Rich Kreitsch joined us as we start to just commemorate the amazing career of Masato Yoshino. We had three matches on there that are accessible so you can watch along with us as well. Case, I know you have something big popping up that you guessed it on in the future.
Oh, yes. I joined WH Park on the Post Wrestling Network. We did a biography, an autobiography of Kenta Kobashi's All Japan career, and that will be up this weekend. So if you're looking on your calendar, that is in the June 4th, 5th, 6th range. It'll be up sometime around there. I don't know the exact date that it's going up, but when WH contacted me, I was almost under the assumption of like, oh, we'll just talk about kind of our favorite moments in Kobashi's career. It'll be a nice little podcast. No. We started at this man's birth, and we went through until the Noah Exodus, and we talked about every big moment in Kenta Kobashi's career. There's plenty of match recommendations in there. I learned some stuff about Kenta Kobashi and who some of his athletic inspirations were. There's a specific athlete that really inspired him to become a wrestler that I did not know about. That was fascinating to me. It's tremendous. WH Park does such a great job with all of his content over on the Post Wrestling Network, and I was thrilled to guest on that podcast and talk about Kenta Kobashi. Both Mike and I have been on one of his prior shows previously. I'm assuming those podcasts are still available. Before, he was talking about All Japan in depth. He was talking about Jushin Thunder Liger in depth on the Thunderstruck series. Mike talked about Shima versus Liger from the 2000 Super J Cup. I talked about Eita versus Liger from the 2016 Super J Cup. Both of those matches with full in-depth reviews over on the Post Wrestling Podcasting Network.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to catch that when WH and Post release that. It's something that I find just like the inspiration behind wrestlers I find very fascinating. And Kenta Kobashi is one of the ones that I don't know. So I'm looking forward to that. But that's going to do it for this week. We'll be back next week talking about the Kobe Samba Hall show and probably a lot of other stuff as we're entering a little bit of a lull here. But you can follow the podcast at Open Voice Gate. You can follow me at Fujiheya with two eyes like Don Fuji. You can follow Case at _InnerCase. But for Case, I'm Mike. That's it from the Voice Gate. Take care.